How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 163 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. You can check out my blog once you're there, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, and you can find all my Thunder coverage on that page. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Tuesday episode today, I'm in New York. The Thunder play in Brooklyn. This is the Tuesday episode. Yeah, because it's going up Tuesday morning, but I'm recording this late on Monday. The Thunder play in Brooklyn on Tuesday. Maybe, depending on weather, who knows? Maybe we'll know more by the time this podcast goes up. Anyway, I got on the line with me Michael Scotto, senior NBA writer for Basketball Insiders and freelancer for the Associated Press and Italian food authority, I think is the best way to put it in your title. Is that fair?
I think that's definitely fair to say. What's up, my man? How you doing?
I'm good. It's good to be home.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Brooklyn misses you. And I know that, they have the Brooklyn Nets dancers and they have team hype at the Barclays Center. But you were indeed one of my favorite sources of entertainment while sitting along press row with you during Nets game. So it's great to have you back in town.
Ali, first of all, you're too kind. Second of all, Ali Love takes offense to that.
Ali's cool too, no question.
Yeah, Ali Love is the, I guess there's no Thunder equivalent. There's no Ali Love for the Thunder.
I don't know.
I don't know. I can't even analogize it. She's the hype woman in between timeouts and in between quarters is the best way that I can put it.
When she tells Brooklyn to stand up, they do. Although Dave Diamante also does that every fourth quarter.
Yeah, he does, and they don't always do it, honestly.
Well, he tells them, get off the phone. You, stand up.
So what's gone? I mean, no one thought the Nets were going to be good coming into this year. They're 12-53. They're the worst in the league by eight games as the time we're recording this. I forget if the Lakers play tonight, but they'll still be the worst in the league by the time tomorrow comes around, by the time Tuesday night comes around. What exactly has gone wrong? And if there's a bright spot with this team, because we know there's not necessarily a future with the draft picks or the lack of draft picks, and there's not a ton of NBA, really good NBA talent on this team. What is the bright spot? Is there a bright spot?
Well, for starters, what's gone wrong is Jeremy Lin has missed most of the season due to nagging injuries, and with him back in the lineup, they're not title contenders by any means, but they're certainly a much more competitive team and they're winning more as of late. Brooke Lopez shooting three-pointers during games instead of just in warm-up routines and hitting and knocking them down pretty efficiently has been a bright spot for the Brooklyn Nets, as you mentioned. Other than that, I'd say Caris LeVert has also shown signs of being a pretty good NBA player that at least can evolve into one as he's in his rookie year right now. But, like you said, Fred, we expected this coming into the season. But, hey, with that said, like any good poker player, Sean Marks has made the most with the hand he's been dealt. And he got a first-round pick for Bojan Bogdanovic in the trade with the Wizards. And I'm curious to see if he's going to package the two picks that they have in the first round. They have Boston's pick when they eventually do swap, if maybe they move up or try to swing for the fences in the 20s and take guys that in a deeper draft this year that may have gone higher in years past.
Sean Marks is really smart.
I'll tell you what, this organization is totally different than it was when I was there. Like, it's definitely completely different. I mean, am I wrong in saying that over the last year, the transformation of just the culture of the organization is just vast?
Yeah, and I think it started when they with the exodus of you and changing the culture here, you know. You know, it's crazy. But, yeah, no, there's definitely a different tone. With just from the way guys even warm up before games and go about their business. The whole front office coaching staff, everything's been completely revamped. The new facility, the HSS training center and all that. I think that they're on the way to being where they want to be. It's just going to take at least, you know, in my opinion, 3 to 4 years, I would say at the earliest, just because, you know, they have an empty cupboard of assets right now. And Sean's been trying to, you know, restockpile that cupboard, just like the Brooklynites here with the bread and milk as the snowstorm is about to hit.
Yeah, you know, one of the things with the Nets that they have done okay, they've been pretty good with scrap heap guys. Like Sean Kilpatrick is a great pickup for them. Like, Sean Kilpatrick is an NBA player. He will have an NBA career now, and anybody could have had him for any price, and they signed him, and then they gave him non-guaranteed years tacked on to, you know, at the end of a contract that he signed off, a couple of 10-day contracts, when he came in and performed really well. And if you can, like, hit on a minimal percentage, I mean, you know, I'm not talking about half of them. If you can hit on a really small percentage of the guys you bring in for 10 days, or you bring in on non-guaranteed deals who really you shouldn't expect anything out of, and those guys turn into NBA players, and you can pick up those guys for, like, on a Kilpatrick-like contract. Like, Spencer Dinwiddie's been a guy who he's not terrible. Like, he can contribute in a way, and he's contributed okay, and he shot the ball okay when he's had open looks, and he's done some things that can help. And, like, Caris LeVert was a little bit of a risky pick because of his health. People expected him to go later, but he looks like a guy who's going to be able to defend multiple positions. And that's kind of their only way out of this, right? Because they're not going to have the draft picks, and realistically, they're not going to sign the big names unless they overpay for somebody. And overpaying doesn't necessarily seem like something that Sean Marks really wants to do. I don't think he wants to overpay so that they can win 36 games in 2 years. I think he'd rather gradually build, just based on what I know about him and what I know from him. And I think that's kind of the way that they have to go if they're going to take that approach. But they've done an okay job in that. And maybe in a couple of years, they get to a point where it's like, okay, well, now they've got like 5 pretty good role players, and they've got a couple other decent players, and maybe they're a 33-win team now, and then they build from there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, going back to Sean Kilpatrick, that was technically Sean Marks's first move as a GM, was signing him to the 10-day contracts and then eventually the long-term deal, where he kind of gave him what I like to call the Sam Hinkie deal, where you get him locked up for a few years at team options for the minimum over the next, you know, 2-3 years. He's got the team option for next season, which Brooklyn is likely to pick up. So I expect to see Sean back next year. And then, you know, another guy that has kind of come out of nowhere in a sense, a guy like Joe Harris, who after his rookie season spent last year injured in his second year in the league. And for Joe coming in, showing that he can be a shooter off the bench, Quincy Acey has whatever him and Brook Lopez, whatever Kool-Aid they're drinking from 3-point range, it seems to be working. And, you know, Trevor Booker's a guy that can be a serviceable bench guy on a really good team. I love the intensity that he brings, and just him as a locker room guy and a veteran. So he certainly tried to, as you mentioned, build slowly and kind of take chances on guys like that. We saw them go with Anthony Bennett and, you know, swing for the fences with him. It didn't work out, but that's a no-risk situation that could have turned out well. Unfortunately, it didn't for Anthony. But certainly, I think that Sean has done, as I mentioned before, he's played the hand he's dealt, and he's made the most of it. Going forward, I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to try to do in free agency and on the trade market. I personally expect Brook Lopez to be available again this summer, and to see if they can continue to build and try to get some first-round picks back for him. Because as much as they like Brook, Brook is, you know, quickly approaching 30, and in the prime of his career, he can't move the needle for this team right now with the lack of assets that they have and you know, quality players, you know. So you might as well get something for him as much as you can, whether it's a first-round pick and a player or two first-round picks if they can, ideally. But I think it's going to be tough because he'll be in the last year of his contract. And then in terms of free agency, you've got guys that they're going to target like Otto Porter, Kentavious Caldwell, Pope, and really try to swing for the fences and see if they can land those guys and start to, you know, get young assets. But it's going to be tough because they're restricted free agents. I expect, you know, both of their teams to try to match their offers. So, you know, you also mentioned maybe trying to overpay for guys. Now, if you can get a star on the market, you have to consider it. But no one player is going to turn everything around for Brooklyn that quickly, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I just don't think that's the type of move that's in the DNA of this. Maybe the old guard, but I don't think that's in the DNA of this new management. I just don't see them trying to do it. As a matter of fact, I think they might go totally the opposite way because they were so over hasty with previous moves. And, you know, people always talk about the Boston deal that they made, you know, the Garnett and Pierce and Jason Terry deal where they gave up draft picks for years. People talk about the Joe Johnson deal. You know what does not get talked about enough?
What's that?
The Gerald Wallace deal.
Yeah, you know, Billy thought that there were no impact players. Billy,
they only top three protected that pick, and they gave up what ended up turning into Damian Lillard for a rental of Gerald Wallace, and they signed him to a four-year, $40 million contract, which he didn't produce close to production.
No.
Deserving of that contract. And Gerald Wallace was great in his prime. Underrated, really good player, but that trade was a disaster, that trade.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you look at what Billy did at that time, he didn't think that there were any impact players in the draft. Whoops. But in terms of that, with Gerald Wallace, I'll say this. Gerald Wallace was a good media guy with the voice of a young Barry White. My goodness.
He's got one of the greatest voices.
For those who have never heard Gerald Wallace speak, it was like doing an interview with Barry White.
Yes. It's so true. He and Tom Thibodeau have the lowest registered voices.
Oh, Tibbs, yeah. Tibbs'
voice. He's got a radio voice. I would listen to Tibbs. A Tibbs and Gerald Wallace radio show would be incredible. I don't know what they're talking about. I don't really care what they're talking about. Honestly, they're both incredibly intense, so it might be hilarious independent of their voices.
Absolutely.
And Gerald Wallace was a good interview.
He was a good interview because one thing I respect about Gerald Wallace, he always kept it real, or 100 emoji, as the kids would say these days. But absolutely, G-Dub was a boss in that regard. But we'll see. We'll see if we ever get Gerald on the radio one of these days.
What's Russell Westbrook's line going to be on Tuesday night?
At least 30, 10, and 10. We know that.
Oh, yeah. The only way he doesn't get there is if they lead by a lot and, like, he doesn't play the fourth quarter. Or if it snows and nobody plays.
Yeah. I mean, even then, I could see Russell Westbrook playing in a foot of snow, just dunking on snowmen.
So let's talk snow. So for those who are totally unaware because – you live in Oklahoma or you live in New Zealand or whoever, you know, wherever you are when you listen to this podcast and you were like a normal person, unaware of what's going on in New York. There is a nor'easter that's supposed to hit. I think it's supposed to come in around 3 a.m. As of now, they say around 3 a.m. on Tuesday morning. And it's supposed to snow like crazy. Parts of New York are supposed to get up to a foot and a half of snow.
They've already canceled. I know my fiance doesn't have to go to teach that day because they canceled schools already. And the MTA at midnight is shutting down service. So it's going to be interesting.
Right. And for those who don't live in New York, like shutting down public transportation is a huge deal. Like that's not – it's not like a thing where like public transportation tends to shut down at midnight or 12:30. That's rare.
For those who don't know, that's like putting Russell Westbrook in the triangle offense.
Oh, that's a very topical New York joke.
Oh, you know it. Do you know what's funny really quick, Fred? Because I know you'll appreciate this as a guy that's been in the media contingent here. So after the Knicks lost to the Nets, for those who may not know, when the Knicks lost to the Nets and gave up 120 points, after the game, they were asked about the triangle. And you can imagine that, and you know who, I'm not going to say names, but you know which media guys, including myself, kind of looked up to the ceiling going, we're talking about the way Allen Iverson was like, we're talking about practice. I was going, we're talking about the triangle. They couldn't stop someone in a phone booth right now. And you're telling me that we're talking about the triangle right now and how that could help them on defense? Whatever happened to Kurt Rambis, the defensive coordinator, as if he was Steve Spagnuolo on the Giants? What happened with that?
Their defense is so bad. It's really bad.
Fred, I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you and I laced them up at Terminal 23, we could do some work.
Well, how many defensive players do they have? Courtney Lee is a pretty good defensive player. Porzingis should be a good defensive player, but they're forcing him to guard in the perimeter so much. Like, that dude's a five. He's a five, yeah. And they push him out to the perimeter, and they misuse him on both sides of the ball. Derrick Rose hasn't been good for – I feel bad for Porzingis because I think they stunted his development this year. And I'm not saying he's not going to reach his peak at some point, because I think he's one of those guys that's probably so good that he can probably get there independent of the organization. But, man, they're stalling. They're stalling it for sure, because, like, look at the leaps that some of these other second-year guys like Towns and Jokic have taken this year. And then you look at him and you look at the difference there, and it's that – Denver took a while to get there because they were playing Nurkic over him and they were featuring other guys in their offense. And then finally they realized, wait a second, let's run everything through Jokic. He's our best player. And Minnesota, who's been, you know, on, you know, letting Towns carry them whenever he wants, they realized from the very beginning he's the guy who's got to be taking on the burden of the offense. And with the Knicks, it's like Melo and Rose freeze out Porzingis late in games. Rose freezes him out a lot. Rose, I think, passes out of pick and rolls. Like less than all but very few point guards in the entire league, passes out of drives out of all but very few point guards in the league. And he does not, they turn him into a spot up shooter again. And earlier in the year, he's taking guys off the dribble and he's crossing guys over and he's posting up. And now they just kind of turn him into a spot up shooter. And they're not letting him develop those shot creation skills, which I think he's going to be able to have. And man, if I were a Knicks fan, and I know a lot of Knicks fans because all my friends from growing up are Knicks fans, they just want to, they want to punch somebody, and I honestly don't really blame them.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. There have been plenty of punches thrown at MSG this year, now that you think about it, you know, with Oakley and whatnot. But certainly with the Knicks, man, they've had more signal problems on offense than the Long Island Railroad at Jamaica sometimes, so... There's nothing you could do with the way this season has transpired. But, you know, you mentioned about defense really quickly. You just watch, like, Derrick Rose and Melo on defense. They're, like, they're worse than the cherry pickers at the park.
Oh, yeah, Rose is especially bad. Rose is really he kills their defense. If a big comes over to set a ball screen on him, he doesn't read the screens. I don't know if it's that he doesn't pay attention to the communication or he just is not good at navigating it. It's not like he has, you know, an unbelievable amount of effort on defense, but it's not like he just lies there and does nothing either. He's just not good at it. He can't navigate a ball screen at all. It kills their defense because when you start at the point of attack and it's just not – it's not good, and you can get these kind of mini half-court mini breaks, 3-on-2s or whatever it is, and it's really tough to defend once you're in that scenario.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if he ends up coming back because I can't necessarily see Drew Holiday leaving yet, especially if they're going to pay him close to a max. And I don't see, you know, Lowry, Steph Curry, any of those guys going. So it's like, well, after Rose, you know, where is the free agent point guard market? George Hill, he's not going anywhere either. So Knicks are going to be in a really tough spot unless they continue to put the tank in tanking and, you know, move up high enough where they can get a point guard that's worth developing.
Is there a more depressing sign for the Knicks than on a podcast where we are talking about Nets Thunder? We've now said more negative things about the Knicks than we have about the Nets. Is that like the worst sign for the Knicks? Somehow we're talking about the Knicks right now. I don't even know how this happened. Totally uninvolved. They're just so depressed. Their gravitational pull of depression is so strong. They just yank us over to them just because we're here.
I mean, you know, when you lose to the Nets, like Carmelo said last night, it felt like Biggie was in the building. So, yeah, I mean, there's certainly a pull, you know, towards them, because how can you not? It's like watching bad reality TV.
It is. No, it's like watching really good reality TV, if I'm being honest. It's really good reality TV. It's thoroughly entertaining. So you just had dinner. What do you what's the Scotto family eating over there?
Well, you know what? The good thing is it was a good meal. If it's a bad meal, I always joke with everybody that I had vomit puttanesca. But today was a good meal. We rarely have a bad meal. Only when we go outside the house. Mama Scotto is a good cook. My fiance is decent as well. So a little bit of everything. The one thing about Italians, when you tell them what you eat, and then you got to pause and go, yeah, no, that was just the appetizers. A little antipasto, a little pasta fazool, you know. And then finally, when you get to the salad, it's like, oh, okay. Oh, so that was it. No. Then after that, we had veal parmesan, a little bolognese, and then a dessert. You get a sfogliatelle, and you get the cookies. Over here, we get them at a core pastry. And this is one thing I'll say. Some people call these cookies rainbow cookies. An Italian from Brooklyn calls them the seven-layer cookies, because there's seven layers of different fillings. You got your chocolate, your apricot filling, and all those different layers, they come out to seven. So the real paisans over here call them seven-layer cookies.
You are such a stereotype.
You know what? I kind of have to be, Fred, because the neighborhood changes a little bit. You know, we got the Cobble Hill area especially, we've got Smith Street was revamped a little further down. You've got the Brooklyn Bridge Park. You've got the Nets now at Atlantic Terminal. The area's really come up over the past 10 years or so. And, you know, I've been here my whole life other than when I dormed at Hofstra on Long Island, around the time Charles Jenkins was there, for those who may not know. Also a great place that I hold near and dear to my heart. But, because there's nothing like a true Brooklyn Italian person. That you will not, you can't like copy that anywhere else.
That is incredibly true. I can't disagree with that. There is no other demographic like that one.
No question. Forget about it. No question. You know what? There's nothing to it. It's like a good seven layer cookie. It's got all the right layers.
All right, we can end it on that one then. Anything to plug before we go?
Keep posted with my tweets, certainly as we get towards free agency coming up, at Mike A. Scotto. So that's Mike, a capital A, Scotto like the lotto, Scotto.
Great. And anything big you want to report? Game being canceled, game not being canceled? What you're having for dinner tomorrow night?
Well, as far as the game, you know, honestly, I believe Oklahoma City is in town, and
they're here.
And so, with them being in town, generally the NBA tries to play those games. However, with New York City, you know, and Mayor de Blasio kind of shutting down, Mayor Bill de Blasio, for those who don't know, that shutting down mass transit at midnight. Technically, you know, midnight is in Wednesday morning, excuse me, Tuesday morning rather. That certainly will hinder, I think, the NBA's plans to keep the game going. So it's honestly a coin flip. As far as food for tomorrow, let me tell you something. Nothing's wrong with some good Italian leftovers. I think that's what we're going to end up having.
There you go. And so something to keep in mind, if the game is actually canceled tomorrow, and I don't know if it is or isn't, but it's worth looking at the schedules in advance. The Nets don't have two consecutive off days at all for the rest of the season, which means if the NBA is going to make it up, if it's canceled tomorrow and they're going to make it up, that means at least one of, if not both, the Nets and the Thunder end up having a back-to-back-to-back, which is not unprecedented. The NBA did that last year. Washington had a game canceled. I don't remember why. They had to make it up. I think it was against Detroit. And Washington ended up having a back-to-back-to-back. That was in February. but there's not a lot of time left in the season. I guess conceivably something I thought about, maybe the best case scenario, if they're able to do it, if it's still open, is if it's canceled on Tuesday, they could play it Wednesday. Because the Thunder don't play until Toronto on Thursday. They could fly out after that game to go to Toronto. And the Nets would have a back-to-back-to-back in that scenario, but they have one in any scenario. They would, but they play the Knicks on
Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday, so it's not like the travel's crazy. They're still home, and then they play at home on Friday. So it's not like that's so crazy. And what they would do in that scenario, I don't even know if this is possible, but what they would do in this scenario, Green Day has a concert at Barclays on Wednesday. So I guess they could do like an early game or something like that, maybe. Do a noon game or I don't know if they want to do that because of, you know, fans and money and all that kind of stuff. But I guess it's better not playing the game at all from a monetary perspective. And if they play it, I don't know what the deal is with them having to give tickets back and that kind of stuff. But at least, you know, if you play like a noon game or something like that, you give an extra 7 hours or 5 hours or whatever it is for rest heading into the next day. So it's not like the players have, you know, 19 hours to recover until they play the next game. But I don't know. I'm riffing because I don't know how you make this up. But that does kind of seem like the most practical way. The Thunder don't have to fly back to New York. It just kind of seems like it would make the most sense. But then again, what really does make the most sense is just playing on Tuesday in the scheduled time.
I just think that, you know, Commissioner Adam Silver better watch out because it sounds like we're making a run for Commissioner Katz. you got it all figured out. You got the Green Day concert. You've got
I figured it all out.
Fred yeah. Fred is for the folks. Fred is for the people, worrying about them for the tickets, and especially when we've seen half the teams, you know, sick guys in the league and whatnot. The other night, you know, the Warriors and the Spurs when they were on national TV, it was like a who's who game for a second. So Fred Katz is for the people, folks.
There you go. That's exactly what I am. I'm here to represent everybody. And you can remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Lockdown Thunder. Questions, comments, email lockdownthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and you can check out Thunder Road, my blog there. Follow team coverage and see what's next for the team. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow. Whether it snows or not, I'll be here tomorrow. Mike, thanks for coming on, man.
My pleasure, brother.
Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
The High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.